Imagine plunging 80 feet headfirst into the ground, breaking your back in 12 places and surviving. Well, that's what happened to a regular voice on this show, the former Lib Dem MP Limpet Opic. It happened indeed 17 years ago, and he has been waiting all this time to get his face fixed. He's getting a new look for 2016, and he hopes it will leave him looking more like movie star George Clooney. He wishes indeed. Well, before he told me about the big operation that's planned for him, he took me back to the day he fell out of the sky while paragliding.
It was the 13th of April, 1998, a day I'll never forget. I was paragliding with a friend of mine. Paragliding is when you basically jump off a hill with a parachute on your back and you expect it to fly. It maybe sounds a bit crazy, but it's a wonderful sport, except when it goes wrong. And that day, it went wrong. Either the wind changed or I made a mistake, and I suspect the latter, to be honest. And to cut a long story short, I fell 30 metres vertically, hit the ground at a tremendous speed, and I created for myself very serious, and let's be blunt, life-threatening injuries.
Mm-hmm. 30 metres into the ground. Horrendous.
That's right.
Horrendous.
It was not something I would have ever considered was a survivable accident, if I'm honest with you. I think that probably the paraglider itself slightly slowed me down, but not by much, because I hit the ground so hard that I smashed my ribs, my sternum, my back in 12 places, and my jaw in 4 places. So the accidents were very serious. I had internal blood, and frankly, it wasn't obvious to my friend that I was even alive. He was at that time a serving police officer, so he knew what road traffic accidents could do to people. He came over and put me on my side, thinking I was dead. But his action brought me round, spluttering back to life from a condition of unconsciousness.
Mm-hmm. Did he save your life?
There's no doubt that Rob Burrows saved my life. Without him, I'd have died on that hilltop. And more than that, he made the judgment that he couldn't risk leaving me in a remote part of Wales in the mountains to get help because he'd have come back to a corpse. There's really actually no way of describing this without it sounding dramatic. Mm-hmm. But he made a life and death decision for me. And for me, he basically chose life, though it did involve walking for 1 mile with a broken back. Which is a gamble, because I could have ended up essentially paralysed as a result. And that's the moment I realised I would prefer to be paralysed than dead. It's altered my attitude towards disability, to be honest, mm-hmm. and towards how hard I will fight to survive.
So you were conscious enough then to make that decision, were you?
I wasn't conscious initially. I was out cold as a result of the accident. But when I came back, I had my wits about me in the following sense. I knew I was going to die if I stayed on the hillside, and Rob knew I was going to die if he left me there, because it would have taken him maybe 1.5 hours to get help there. And we decided that the lesser of evils was to risk paralysis while trying to get to the car, which is, once again, as I say, quite a while, a distance away, and then go for the nearest hospital that we could think of, and that was about a 15-mile drive.
Mm-hmm. And tell us then about how you were left afterwards. You were in a horrendous condition coming off the mountain, and you've had to, I suppose, endure those injuries ever since. How did it leave you, Limpet?
Well, I went to Royal Shrewsbury Hospital, and they did some life-saving activity. And once I was stable, I was transferred to a back hospital called Gibbowen, probably the world's best back hospital. And that's when I discovered the extent of my injuries. And to list them, initially, I had a massive cast to try and reset the 12 broken vertebrae I had. My ribs were left to heal themselves. My jaw was wired as best they could do it. And all the other injuries were, once again, left to heal slowly. It took me about 1 year to get right. But the enduring things have been a great caution for me about my back. And secondly, an awareness that sooner or later my jaw and my face was going to need serious medical attention. Mm-hmm. And now, 17 years later, that time's come.
So what all is going to be involved in this operation? Because it sounds as if it's going to be pretty extensive.
Well, the time bomb for my accident was, surprisingly enough, not my back, but my jaw. And my teeth don't fit. I've only got 2 teeth that meet, which makes eating hard. It's a strange kind of diet, because I can't eat very much red meat and so forth. So ironically, it does keep me fit in a different way. But there's no getting away from the fact that the two teeth that I do use are disintegrating, and it will become a medical emergency within a few years if it's not done now. So what they have to do is they have to break my face and reset my jaw, basically straighten up my face. It's always been a bit off-center, but the accident made it a lot worse. So it's not a cosmetic exercise. It is very much a medical procedure to make it possible for me to eat for the rest of my days.
Are you worried about it?
I'm a bit worried about the extent of the operation. Any head-related operation incurs with it some risk for obvious reasons, because your head is a very vulnerable and fragile part of your body. But I haven't got an alternative. And I suppose this operation reminds me of how lucky I was in the first place. The accident could have killed me, and it didn't. It could have paralyzed me, and it didn't. Instead, I'm left with this, let's face it, fairly difficult orthodontic problem, but one which I believe the hospital can and will fix. Mm-hmm. It's a risk I have to take, because the alternative is not to be able to eat at all, really, in a few years' time.
And is it going to change your appearance in any way?
Yes, apparently so. They haven't told me exactly how I'll look. They did give me some counselling and say, after the accident, the person you look at in the mirror will be a stranger for the rest of your life. Maybe I'll get used to it. I just said to them, as long as you don't make me look like Saddam Hussein or Nick Clegg, then that's all right. Ideally, George Clooney, that would be acceptable, but I'll accept any face that they give me as long as it works.
It must be something, though, isn't it, to think to yourself, you're going to go undergo this operation, you're going to be wrapped in bandages probably, and at some stage you're going to be facing yourself in the mirror looking at somebody who you don't really recognise.
It's a bit like a James Bond film, really, because I'll go into the operation looking like me, and I'll come out of the operation a few weeks later, perhaps when the bandages come off, looking like somebody else. And I'm curious about it. Not many people get the chance to be literally two-faced, even though, as a politician, you could argue that was my profession beforehand. I'm doing this literally. And, as I say, I don't really have a choice about it. I'm really grateful to the NHS for being willing to invest a fairly considerable amount of time and money to do this. But there will be that culture shock, or psychological shock, to be more precise, about looking different to the way I've looked for certainly the last 18 years and probably for the last 50. So I wonder how that will feel, but I haven't got an alternative.
I'll talk to you about the mental and how you might deal with this mentally in a moment or two, but just how much does it cost, Lambert? You mentioned the fact that it's been paid for the NHS.
I've no idea, but it must come to tens of thousands of pounds, and that's just because it is a complicated procedure. I couldn't afford to get it done. I'll still have the problem of many missing teeth. So I've got 2 more years of work on this after the face has been corrected. But this is the NHS at its best, and it just proves to me that having saved my life previously, they've come back to finish putting me right 17, 18 years later. That's so much of a blessing for all of us. I think we sometimes forget that.
Have you been on a waiting list for this treatment?
It's taken a long time. Every time there have been medical emergencies and an overwhelming demand for services in the hospital, my operation's been postponed, but I'm not complaining about that. I'll wait my turn patiently. The emergencies have to be dealt with. And now I'm very close to the top of the list. Even if they put it back again, I wouldn't complain, but I must be weeks or months away from having the final operation. Maybe it has to be 2 operations, but I will never complain about waiting for such an essential piece of surgery paid for really by the state and by the taxpayer. Yeah. And I will never look that gift horse in the mouth.
And for those people raising an eyebrow at that fact, Lambert, that the taxpayer is going to pick up the bill for this, what would you say to them?
Everyone is entitled in this country to good health. You could argue that I made a mistake on the mountain. I'm not sure it was my fault at the beginning. But the same goes for people in road accidents, people who make other mistakes that lead to emergency medical treatment. I'll never begrudge that to other people. And frankly, I'd be a hypocrite if I did. I think that the NHS is there to catch us when we fall and to put us right when it can. That is the great, great gift that we've got by living in the United Kingdom. And I'm just lucky that I've got that. And I just hope people will be accepting that, regardless of an MP or being on television or celebrity, I'm somebody with a pretty serious problem. And I'm lucky that I'm going to get it fixed.
Yeah. Was going private ever an option, given the fact that you've waited some 17 years for this?
I couldn't go private because I couldn't afford to. When I lost my seat as an MP, I took a very big financial tumble, and I hadn't recovered from that. Perhaps at my richest days, when I was a big business executive, I might just have been able to afford that kind of thing. But it's out of the question. It's out of my financial reach now. It's the NHS or nothing. And I'm just pleased that the state is able to support me in my time of need.
And now, of course, you're looking forward to getting your new face. How do you prepare mentally for that, for such a change?
I got some counselling to say that I would look different and different forever after the operation. They said it has a cosmetic effect, even though that's not the motivation behind the operation. And the truth is, I don't know. Maybe I'll just handle it calmly. Maybe it will be a real shock. And it was clear from what they said that other people who've gone through similar operations have had to take some time to cope with it. So I don't really know. Perhaps it means that people won't be able to laugh at my wonky face anymore. but then maybe that's been a trademark. Mm-hmm. If I walk down the street and no one notices me anymore, not sure if that's a blessing or a curse, but I haven't got a choice.
And George Clooney has nothing to worry about, has he?
I think George Clooney might need to look out, because if it's good enough, my next step could be from Parliament to Hollywood. Different kind of acting, different kind of performance. I might have the face for it at the moment.
And different,
as you're proving, I've got the face for radio.
And don't we know that only too well. Limbert, we'll leave it there. Thank you so much indeed for talking to us on the programme this morning.